Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Federal public health authorities have taken a step towards allowing cruises to resume in U.S. waters, but there's still no clear timeline for large cruise ships to restart voyages to Alaska. KRBD's Eric Stone reports.
The CDC's new guidance clarifies how port communities and cruise lines can work to resume cruising. But the cruise industry says the new rules are unworkable. Cruise Lines International Association says the rules are so murky that, quote, no clear path forward or timetable can be discerned. There are concerns from smaller towns that often host big ships that the CDC's requirements on how to respond to outbreaks just aren't practical. The Alaska Municipal League's Nils Andreasen says coastal communities already have very limited medical facilities
to be able to do all the things that are outlined in those in that guidance.
Skagway, for example, doesn't have a hospital or the infrastructure the CDC would require under the new guidance. Mayor Andrew Cremata says a community of around 1,000 people can't provide treatment for megaships with 4 to 5 times that year-round population.
I'm throwing my hands in the air because we can't do that.
Whether cruise lines will return to Alaska this summer remains an open question, but hope appears to be fading. The CDC requires that cruise lines give 30 days notice before operators conduct a simulated voyage intended to test health protocols. The agency requires another 60-day waiting period before they'll grant lines the right to set sail with paying passengers. And, of course, Alaska's international cruise vessels can't sail between the lower 48 and Alaska without a stop in British Columbia. But Canada has closed its ports and waters to cruise ships through at least next spring. A legislative workaround has found broad support from Alaska's elected officials, but has so far gained little traction in Congress. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The deadline's been extended to sign up for health care coverage through the federal insurance marketplace. The American Rescue Plan passed by Congress last month also extends subsidies, making medical insurance more affordable. As KUAC's Robin reports, for many Alaskans, it can be free.
If you missed the very brief enrollment period last year, or if you've lost your job recently, you can have a do-over for signing up for federally subsidized medical insurance. The Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is extending the Affordable Care Act enrollment period to August 15th.
It's the longest we've ever seen.
That's Lori Wing-Heyer, Alaska's Director of Insurance. She says normally the enrollment period is about 2 months long.
And of course, ours closed in December, and then was reopened when the Biden administration was sworn in. And now they've extended it out till August 15th.
With the passage of the American Rescue Act, the parameters for buying insurance in the federal marketplace on the website healthcare.gov are also more generous.
It used to be 400% of the federal poverty level. Now they've changed it to 8.5% of your total income. So there's some healthy subsidies out there for people.
At the end of 2019, the division reported only 200,000 Alaskans insured. That's only about 29%. The division's annual report says the cost of health insurance is the biggest barrier. Wing-Heyer says the pandemic made it much worse. The Department of Labor and Workplace Development tracked 23,000 jobs lost from January last year to January 2021. 3,600 of those jobs are in the interior. Many of those folks lost employer-provided medical insurance. So she's encouraging them to turn to the healthcare.gov website to look for insurance that is subsidized by an advance premium tax credit, where the federal government pays for most or all of the cost of insurance, depending on your income. Wing-Heyer says about 84% of Alaskans who buy in the individual market receive the subsidy. Before the American Rescue Plan was passed, people could get the tax credit only if their income did not exceed 400% of the poverty level. That's about $51,000 for an individual. It's a lot lower than the median household income in Fairbanks. But under the new law, folks would not have to pay more than 8.5% of their income on health insurance premiums. So using the 2019 pre-pandemic median household income for Fairbanks North Star Borough, that's about $77,000. The website calculates a tax credit of $837 a month. That brings the monthly premium for some plans down to zero. Wing-Heyer says all the plans provide about the same essential health benefits, but you may pay more in premiums to get a lower deductible or a lower copay. Alaska is one of 36 states that use the healthcare.gov federal platform. 15 other states run their own marketplaces, and a lot of them also extended the sign-up time. In Fairbanks, the Interior Community Health Center routinely helps people sign up for insurance. They have a staff of certified application counselors who can help folks navigate the process. Their phone number is 458-1556. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
COVID-19 hospitalizations are rising in Alaska again. The state reported 8 new virus hospitalizations yesterday, with 37 COVID-diagnosed patients and one additional patient awaiting testing results hospitalized statewide. 10 patients were on ventilators. The Department of Health and Social Services also announced 83 new Alaska resident COVID cases, including 24 in Anchorage, 20 in Wasilla, and 10 in the Bethel census area. The only cases in the interior were 3 in North Pole and 2 in Fairbanks. 2 new non-resident cases were identified statewide. The DHSS also reported that nearly 32% of Alaskans 16 and older have been fully vaccinated. 23% of Fairbanks North Star Borough residents have achieved that status. A federal grant will expand operations at the University of Alaska Fairbanks' High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, or HARP, facility in Gakona. The ionospheric research station was built by the U.S. military in the 1990s at a cost of nearly $300 million for communications, surveillance, and other research, but in 2015 was turned over to UAF, which rents it out for government and independent projects.
We've been charging a little over $5,000 an hour to use the facility, but we haven't had very many hours, and it's been costing us quite a bit.
UAF Geophysical Institute Director Bob McCoy says a $9.3 million 5-year grant from the National Science Foundation will enable the university to maintain HARP and expand operation of the facility.
Now we can open it up fully and invite in people to come use it. So it's a really big deal for us.
McCoy says the HARP station is the most powerful of 3 ionospheric research facilities on the planet. It uses hundreds of high-frequency radio transmitters and antennas to probe the ionosphere, and McCoy says it's a tool that will be increasingly valuable for scientific experiments involving the aurora as the solar cycle peaks.
Next 4 or 5 years, the ionosphere ought to get a lot more exciting. We should see in the winter a lot more dynamic aurora.
HARP is also useful as a remote sensing tool, an application McCoy says is in demand as the Arctic warms and countries vie for control of it.
We can actually look north several hundred miles from Alaska, and we could study the ocean, we can measure sea ice, or we can look for aircraft or ships out in the Arctic Ocean. HARP can transmit, say, to the north, reflect off the ionosphere down to the sea ice, and you pick up that signal again with either an antenna or a satellite.
McCoy says a separate grant will provide $1 million to build and locate a LIDAR instrument at the HARP site for study of other parts of the upper atmosphere. UAF also plans to relocate other technology to the HARP site to make up what's being called the Subauroral Geophysical Observatory for Space Physics and Radio Science. There's an undersea natural gas leak near a Hillcorp platform in Cook Inlet. Alaska Public Media reports that authorities say they don't know how much gas leaked into the ocean or what caused the leak from the 8-inch-wide pipeline located 80 feet underwater, about 6 miles offshore from Nikiski. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation said Monday that Hillcorp reported the leak to state and federal authorities an hour after it was discovered and immediately reduced pressure in the line. And officials say there's no longer gas running through it. The leaking pipeline is more than 55 years old, according to Homer-based watchdog group Cook Inlet Keeper. The spill area is within the designated habitat of endangered Cook Inlet belugas and Pacific salmon species. I'm Dan Bross.